So yeah, I chose a slightly more controversial title. I'm sorry to come back after the break then to see what I want to talk about. So this is work that I've been over a number of years, and the most recent results were actually taken by my PhD student Kerstin Avila, involved in the work was also Alberto Llosa, who was in Göttingen, and I moved also until January, and now moved to Juan Pedro's place in Hamburg. And there was another poster of my Mark Avila, who did some of the numerical simulations. And we did this work in collaboration with Dave Moxie and Dwight Barclay in Washington, who did more numerical simulations. So, first, I want to explain what I mean by Reynolds riddle. So, in the first part of the talk, I'll try to define this, and then I'll try to convince you that you learn something about that. So, it's of course about Reynolds pipe flow experiments, and here's a picture of Reynolds pipe. So, this is a tube here, glass tube, which sits in a water tank, and Reynolds did dye flow visualization. So in this water here, he injected some dye, and this streak of dye then the flow was laminar, would just proceed down the tube without doing much, just a straight streak basically. But when he increased velocity, he found that at some point he got what he called flashes, in fact, flashes of turbulence. Nowadays we call them turbulent puffs. So you have some localized patches who have some turbulent dynamics, and they come at a certain spacing and sort of an infrequent sequence. If you go to higher Reynolds numbers, then you get turbulence spreading out downstream in a more uniform fashion. So one of the observations that Reynolds did, this is by the way from Reynolds' 1883 paper. So of course the important observation, well, first of all I should mention, as I said, the flow was turbulent as the velocity increases, but he didn't use the word turbulence, he called it sinuous. So the first observation he made is that the critical velocity is proportional to 1 over the diameter, and likewise at the critical velocity where this transition happens to turbulence is proportional to the fluid temperature, which means that it's proportional to viscosity. And this, of course, led him to propose this dimensionless quantity, which we now call the Reynolds number. So in stress, this was at least in large part based on the observation that there is such a critical velocity where the flow goes from laminar to turbulent. So, but then there's a problem with that, and Reynolds already realized that. So if he took great care in setting up the experiment, so he dampened out all noises from the surroundings, he let the water settle in the tank for a long time.
Is there a clip here?
Oh, I got it.
So, yeah, there's a problem in that if you take great care in setting up your experiment and you have a nice inlet nozzle of your pipe, then he found, in his case at least, that the velocity where this transition happens from laminar to turbulent was suddenly 6 times higher, right? So then there's a question, how well defined is actually this critical point? Well, Reynolds came up with a proposition, and I just have some quotes from his 1883 paper here. Let me just read them out to you. So this is his proposition, basically. It became clear to me that if in a tube of sufficient length the water were at first admitted in a high state of disturbance, so you basically make the flow very turbulent at the entrance, let's say, then as the water proceeded along the tube, the disturbance would settle down into a steady condition, which condition would be one of eddies or steady motion. Right. So according to whether the velocity was above or below what may be called the critical the real critical value. So sounds easy enough. You just take your tube, you make it very, you disturb it a lot at the entrance, and then you start at a high velocity, at a high Reynolds number, we would say, I guess, where downstream you expect turbulence, and then you decrease the Reynolds number until you don't find any turbulence downstream anymore, and it's your critical Reynolds number. So that things are probably not quite as easy was already clear from Reynolds' paper, because somewhere else in his paper he says, although at first sight such experiments may appear to be simple enough, yet when one began to consider actual ways and means, so many uncertainties and difficulties presented themselves that the necessary courage for undertaking them was only acquired after 2 years of further study. So, there you go.
And then 100 years.
A few slides on, right? Otherwise I wouldn't be standing here. So this is one of the implications, but then I think I just saw this on Friday when reading through some annual review paper about Reynolds. I discovered that it's actually his work in 1895, which many of you are probably quite familiar with because it is Reynolds' decomposition, I guess, which he invented there, that this work was actually motivated by finding the critical Reynolds number. This was not known to me. But he actually says in the title already, determination of the criterion. He doesn't say which criterion. But then later in the paper, he defines a value k of the Reynolds number, which is this critical point where the flow becomes unstable, and he finds it to be between 1900 and 2000 in his experiments. And the number k being thus a criterion of the possible maintenance of sinuous or eddying motion. And then he says later on, my object in this paper is to show that the theoretical existence of an inferior limit of the criterion follows. So this was the motivation of his paper. He wanted to find this critical Reynolds number, and well, I could say he failed, but you know, but he invented something else, which is very important, of course. But that leaves us with a question. I mean, shouldn't we know what this critical Reynolds number is 125 years later? So what is the state nowadays? Well, I would say we still don't have any idea what this critical Reynolds number is. So if you look through the literature, Reynolds first in 1883 found something around 2020. Then 1895, well, he said it's somewhere between 1900 and 2000. I just took a selection of papers. I mean, there are many, many more. Then there's a work in Göttingen by Water in 56, where at least allegedly he found 2,320. If I have time at the end, I will probably comment on if he really said this 2,320. In the German literature, it seems to be very common to say that pipe flows go turbulent at 2,300. You find it on the German Wikipedia page and so on. And in my physics undergraduate book, it actually has 2,320 exact in there.
So you edited.
Sorry?
You can edit it now.
Well,
no, don't use this kind of.
But I put the question mark not to question any of Rotter's results. I'm a big fan of his work. Just if he really said that this is a critical point or not, this is why I put the question mark. Then there's work by Feist and Eckhardt. These are more recent papers, where they find a value of 2,250. Then there's a Manchester group of Tom Mullen, they find 1,760. Then there was me and co-workers, and we said that possibly there is not even such a critical Reynolds number. The kind of things you say to get published in Nature, but anyway, I'll comment on this later also. And then there's the Bristol group, Ashley Willis and Rich Kurzweil, who found a critical value of 1870. So it's all around 2000, so that, you know, there's no, well, except for that one, but there's nothing exact. It's not like in Rayleigh-Benard convection where we have 1708 or in Taylor-Couet, right? We don't have an exact critical point here. So why is this rather difficult to find then? Why did it take so long? Well, the first thing is that at low Reynolds numbers, turbulence is intermittent and quite stochastic. I have to see if this movie works. I just want to give you an example from the laboratory. Okay. Just the flow going past, it may. Yeah, it's okay. So we injected some turbulence upstream, some disturbances, and we get first a patch of turbulence going by, and then we have a laminar bit in between. Then there's another one being sort of more actively turbulent, and then it's laminar again. So you get these what Reynolds called these flashes, which are spaced by more quiescent, quite laminar fluid in between. So then there's another one that connected to this, really, that turbulence can also decay. This is a numerical simulation done by Mark Avila and my group, and this is just one of these turbulent patches, turbulent puff.
In the co-moving reference frame?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is now in a co-moving reference frame. Huh? And if you just wait, well, it disappears, right? So they have a tendency to also disappear after some time. And it should be another movie. Just to demonstrate what we want to show here, that not all perturbations that you add to the flow are actually going to create turbulence too well. We have an intermittent flow here. As you will see, there are puffs going by intermittently, but at some point I will just perturb continuously. So if you want, the pipe goes along here, and I will perturb continuously between station 2 and 3. I put a very large perturbation in there, which you would think creates turbulence. Reynolds number is 2000. And well, we just wait a moment. So initially we have intermittency everywhere, which we create at the entrance. But then we put a second perturbation here at this point, and I tell you when, so which is much larger. We put that now, and then you see that now downstream there's nothing coming out. So not all perturbations, you know, large amplitude perturbation doesn't necessarily mean you actually create some turbulence. So you may be left with not what you want. So you have to be careful to choose the right initial conditions, I guess, is my message here. So our approach is now, first of all, to identify the relevant processes and then to separate them. And the first one I would like to mention is what we've already seen, is the decay of these turbulent puffs. And here's from our numerical simulations just an example. We pick initial conditions at a slightly higher Reynolds number. The black curve is just a turbulent run at Reynolds number 2200. Oh, this is time. Sorry, yeah, this is a little bit. Yeah, I should improve that. This is time in units of pipe diameters, if you like. And here is the energy, so some kind of kinetic energy. And so this is a turbulence level. And then we pick a starting point, so we just take a snapshot of the flow, and we reduce the Reynolds number. I think in this case it was 1850, and then the colorful ones are then all at 1850. And depending on which initial condition you pick, the red one, you know, decays rather quickly. If you pick the green one instead, it lives much, much longer, and it decays later. What is important to note is that the decay for all the different initial conditions happens on the same time scale, whereas the lifetime is typically much, much longer. If you go to higher Reynolds numbers, the lifetime, well, you could make it much longer. It will be hundreds of thousands of time units, and the decay will still be on order of 50 time units or so. right. So now there were already earlier studies done of this, so I just showed the earlier ones. We have some more detailed ones nowadays, but the first ones who look at this numerically were Holger Feist and Bruno Eckhardt in Marburg. And so what they did is exactly what I described. They picked different initial conditions. They had a rather short pipe there, but anyway, it was what was available at the time. The numerical domain was short to save computing time, and they make a turbulent with different initial conditions. So they picked 50 initial conditions for each Reynolds number, and then after a certain time, so this is time, this is probability, they checked how many of the turbulent events were still there, right? This is just the probability going down as they decay. So, and then they proposed, well, first, the important point to notice is that they all lie on exponential tails. And this means that this thing, is an exponential process, a memoryless process, so you can describe it by this exponential ansatz here. It's the same as radioactive decay, if you like. Right? You have some characteristic time scale, it's called the median time, where we put a T0 here, which is, well, this is actually a mistake they made in their analysis, but I don't know, want to go into too much details. T0 is your initial time that if you add a perturbation, your system takes some time to relax. So it's a sort of transient stage until you have the typical turbulent structure for your Reynolds number. So, and what they found is that this is tau here now. It also improved this graph. That tau is increasing very fast with Reynolds number. Well, you also see that here the slope goes up, or decreases rather. And then they plotted 1 over tau in the inset here, and they proposed that this actually diverged, so that 1 over tau goes to 0 at 2250, and there, therefore, tau is infinite, and you have an infinite lifetime of turbulence. Okay, they made some mistake in the analysis, in that they didn't take this initial T0 time that you see here. I mean, basically these lines don't go through zero, and they treated it as if they did. But anyway, this is I'm just going to show you the experimental data that we took. So so this is the proposition. What is the dependence of this tau on the Reynolds number, really? And they proposed it's proportional to the Reynolds number, and nowadays we found something different. So we did a lot of experiments over the years, and we built very long pipes. So we made them, we picked a small diameter. That's the one I built in Manchester. So it was 4 millimeters in diameter and 7,500 diameters long, so about 30 meters. And so well, many of you may have seen this before, but the method we used is just we add a perturbation somewhere at the entrance or of the pipe, and then we check downstream what we get out. And this check downstream was very simple because we couldn't look into the pipe. It was a copper tube. If you have a laminar flow going through the pipe, your fluid will come out at some angle. It's just sort of a parabolic shape that the water flows out in. Now, if you don't have a parabola anymore, but you have some spot of turbulence or a turbulent puff, then the profile is flatter here at the center, and it's fuller at the walls. So what happens is that the outflow just dips down, right? When the puff arrives, just because of the different distribution of momentum, basically, across the pipe cross-section. And this is beautifully described in Rotter's paper in 1956, this effect. So, and what I did then is just I perturbed up here and I counted down there. I just checked for the water to dip down. I hopefully can show you a movie on the next slide. Now, what is important about the setup? Well, it's very long. We have very long observation times, therefore, and we can, because we just rely on gravity, we have very high control of the flow rate. Yeah, and this is really important because this process we look at is this lifetime increases very, very steeply. So we need to have a resolution much better than 1%. Okay, see if this movie works. I haven't tested this one actually before, but yeah. Oops. Well, I don't click twice. Maybe it works. Yeah, so I add a perturbation. Now upstream, we have to wait a few seconds. And now you probably saw the dip. I add another one. I don't know if something happens now or not. In this case, nothing happens, so the angle of the outflow stays the same. Now now is the next one. Whenever this red spot appears, there's a perturbation, and we have to wait, and now there was another dip, right? So I just counted how many of these perturbations I added upstream would survive and make it downstream. And this allowed me to determine the lifetime. So we have this expression here, as I said, so it's a memoryless process, this exponential ansatz, and I want to have this tau. I want to know what's the dependence of tau on Reynolds. We did this now for fixed times, and we varied the Reynolds number. Fixed time, we pick a fixed length, and we can change this length in steps, which is what we did. So we know the mean velocity of the structure, that it moves downstream, and we know the length, and therefore we know the sort of fixed observation time where we gain our information. Now, what you would expect from this equation, if you just plug in something linear in tau in depending on Reynolds here, which people proposed before, then you would just expect this to be exponentials, right? And you change t, and these become steeper as t increases. But they're all exponentials, and they all hit 1, the probability 1, with increasing Reynolds number at a critical value, and all at the same values, which is a critical Reynolds number. So this is a picture we would have expected our data to lie on such exponentials. What we found instead is, so this again, probability and Reynolds number is, and these are different lengths and different colors or different observation times if you like, that they were S-shaped curves, and they become a little bit steeper as you go along. And well, just to show how time consuming it was to get all this data, so for the highest data point we had to do 100,000 runs, and only 8 of them decayed. So the statistics, the error bars are huge on this point. I give you that. So a bit further back, the error bars are much better. But this is just how, as far as we could push it. And this was actually done by Alberto. This last point, at least. I think the first curves I took. So this is for the different lengths now, and now we can calculate our, based on this formula, we can just calculate our tau, and we can get the, so we plot the tau values for all the data points, and we find, well, this is two different experiments, the Delft experiment. We find, we had earlier proposed an exponential scaling, other people had proposed a linear scaling. Linear scaling on this log scale would go down here basically to a critical point. What we find is something in between, and it turns out the best fit is actually a super exponential. Right? So we have something which is tau equals e to the e to the Reynolds. And this still means that there is no critical point we can define, because a super exponential just asymptotically reaches an infinite tau, right? So this didn't work out. So we couldn't define a critical point based on this analysis, which is what people tried before. Yeah. So for instance, Willis and Kurzweil got their 1870 critical Reynolds number just based on their data here. And we actually recomputed their data now, and we find it lies perfectly on our data already here. It lies very well on our experimental data, but this point moved up a little, and just by doing more runs, and we have more data points out here from the numerics, so we find a perfect match. I just didn't put it up to, well, just a quick comment. We did this for other flows, for duct flow, for channel flow, and the pictures are very similar. We seem to always find these super exponential lifetime scaling. So this is the lifetime done. And the second process I want to introduce is now, well, if we know about the decay of turbulence, we know how these turbulence structures decay, then what about, can they spread? And it turns out that indeed they spread, and let me show you the movie first, if that works. Yeah, it does. So this is a single puff in a numerical simulation, again in a co-moving frame, and if you observe for long enough, of course I just take the interesting part here, they can actually split up. So the initial puff gets a little bit larger, and at some point the front part, if it's large enough, can separate out, and then they get a distance in between, and then you have two of them. Yeah, there's some reasons why you cannot have them densely packed at these Reynolds numbers. They always need to have a certain spacing. If you would put another one in between here, the first one would die. They don't like to be too close to each other. They need some laminar flow in between to sort of keep them going. Now there's some space-time plots here for different Reynolds numbers. So at fairly low Reynolds number, 200, we just observed a single puff over 1,000 time units. If you go a little bit larger, this is 2,300, you see that the splitting starts. So it's just space-time plots here. So you have one to start with, and then you end up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 after 3,000 time units. So there's certainly a spatial process, and now the whole question is which process wins? Is it the decay which outweighs it, or is it, if it spreads faster than it decays, at some point you have something left over in your pipe, and then you can define this in a statistical sense as a critical Reynolds number. So the experiment that we did is basically the same as for the lifetimes. Now we create a turbulent puff, we make sure it's just a single one, and then we have a first sensor to actually check that we just have one single puff to start with, and we check downstream, and we can change its distance in between again, if the puffs have multiplied or not. So we start with one, this is a pressure signal, then you get, here's a successful splitting, at the second sensor you nicely see two peaks. well, this is, I don't have to mention this. Now you have three different cases. The initial puff can decay, it can survive, so nothing happened, or it can split into two or more. We don't really care if it's two, three, or four. It's just the point is that that turbulence somehow was spreading. Well, so my student put that here, so you need to do a lot of measurements to get the statistics out. So the essential point again to mention about this, if you do this, play this game, now these two are numerical results, these two are experimental results. This is time and this is the probability to split. Yeah, no, the probability not to split. So if it's one, yeah. Then you find that the probability not to split decays, but the important point is they lie on exponential tails again. So we can play the same game. We can observe many times and gain the statistics out of that just because it's a memoryless process. Yeah, these things don't age. If that wasn't the case, we couldn't do this whole measurement, equally for the lifetimes. So it's important to note that both the spreading and the decay of these turbulent structures is a memoryless process, are memoryless processes. Right. Okay, and well, we get very similar shapes again. So that's a probability to split as a function of the Reynolds number. Probability goes up with the Reynolds number as expected. And you find these S-shaped curves again. It happens to be the same dependence. It's a super exponential scaling, the best fit we can do anyway. And yeah, we did this for different lengths and so on. And then we can collapse all the data onto a single curve. Now this is the spreading or splitting of turbulence. And you see that the mean time to split decreases in the super exponential fashion with Reynolds number, whereas the mean time or median time to decay shoots up super exponentially, and they intersect at some point. And at this intersection point, well, the spreading outweighs the decay. So, and it happens to be at Reynolds 2040. And now we can just well, and this defines a statistical phase transition, right? So this is just what I said, or you should say where at least the spreading substantially outweighs. It won't be exactly at the intersection points, but as both processes are super exponential, it will be extremely close to it. If you go five further in Reynolds number, the spreading already outweighs the decay by a factor of four. So this goes very rapidly close to this critical point. And just from numerical simulation, so this again a space-time plot. We start with a single puff, just to give you a visual impression. Here at the low Reynolds number, it decays. So this is time here. Oops, why didn't that work? Try again. Well, it doesn't like that for some reason. There's another case here which shows that it actually splits up and forks out. So we will see that probably on a later slide again. Right, and we also looked at a turbulent fraction. So as we increase the Reynolds number, the turbulent fraction, the change in turbulent fraction is first negative. So turbulence disappears below the critical point, whereas above the critical point, turbulence increases, turbulent fraction increases. Right. So in the sense of Reynolds, this is exactly the point that he was looking for. And now this has some further implications. So turbulence actually becomes sustained due to an increase in the spatial complexity and not in the temporal complexity. Right. This was a proposition made by Landau initially, but later also the Rulle-Tuckens picture was always dwelling on the importance of the increase in temporal complexity. But in this case, it's actually purely due to turbulence starting to spread and delocalize spatially. Right. And also, another point is that intermittency is actually intrinsic to the problem. Whatever you do at this low Reynolds number, the flow will be intermittent. So by intermittent, I mean spatially changing laminar and turbulent sections of the flow. And this is actually well known from other systems, which are in the class of spatial-temporal intermittency. And there, I just put two references up here. By the first one was by Kaneko. It's a paper on coupled map lattices, so which show exactly the same behavior. And Chatet-Manville had a paper on this, and Manville was actually proposing this view of the importance of the spatial aspects for many years. Okay, so just to conclude, so the onset of sustained turbulence is a stochastic process. Turbulence becomes sustained by the increase in spatial complexity, and the critical Reynolds number is around 2040. So that's the end of my talk.
And have you some explanations for these super exponential rules?
Not really, no.
This is purely empirically.
Yeah.
Yeah, those numbers, there's exponent Reynolds times something which is like 10^-3 factors, right? And this is for pipe. If we compare this for pipe and for channel, they are comparable or they're different?
In channel, it's actually, the whole problem with finding this critical Reynolds number is that these times here are so huge, right? You have you have to wait for sort of 10^7 time units, and in channel this is much better. That's 2 or 3 orders of magnitude lower.
So if
but
you,
the exact fit, I don't remember now for the channel. No, it was further back, right? You mean the comparison between...
No, I remember the
one more.
For growing...
That's
C1. Oh, here.
C1
is 10^-.
It's 5^-3. This is for what?
This is for the pipe.
For the pipe.
Yeah, yeah.
And another for the pipe, the growing, this was 3. Yeah. Both numbers are pretty small. And the channel, you say, is the electron
energy. That I would have to look up, but yeah, I believe so.
I would try to get this out of, 2π cube or something like that. Because this is a dimensionless number.
Yeah.
So if you tell me that for different geometries there is different, then one can start imagining how such a small number can appear. Mm. Otherwise, it's just pure.
It's just one, actually. C1 times the Reynolds number for your critical Reynolds number.
Yeah, no, that's not the problem. That's C1 and then it's C2 is growing, and then when it grows, that's the Reynolds number.
Right.
Should be pi for a pipe. It should be 1 for a
pipe. Yeah, I would like to have 2 pi cube, and then it's pure theorist view of this.
Yeah, okay. More questions?
Yeah. Yeah,
there
is
one more.
How robust is this? You may have mentioned it to how you perturb, how you do the
perturbation. Oh, yeah. Good point. Are you a referee of our paper?
No.
So we actually put that in for that very reason. It's a very good question. Yes, for the lifetimes we have a paper out already in the Philosophical Transaction. We applied 4 or 5 different ways of perturbing. We had 3 different injection and subtraction mechanisms. We had an obstacle, and we quenched from a higher Reynolds number to a lower one, starting from some turbulence as initial conditions. And they all lie on top of it. You wouldn't be able to they may even be on here. But you wouldn't be able to distinguish the different ones. Now, for the splitting, I didn't mention we did the DNS also. We have 2 different kinds of DNS which start from different initial conditions. One done by us, one done by Moxie and Barclay. And they don't get very high up, but that's just in the nature of things. But here the agreement is very, very good. And we now put in the experiment. I didn't even mention how we perturb, right? We inject a little bit of water through a small hole in the pipe wall. That's what we normally do. Now we put an obstacle in, but you shouldn't put a static obstacle in, because if you put a static obstacle in, let's say you block half the tube, at low Reynolds numbers this won't work anymore. It won't give you any turbulence anymore for some other reasons. But what we did is we quickly moved it. Right, it was just a little piece of wire which from outside with a magnet you could move. And if you do that, so if you have some impulsive way of perturbing, you can do it. And then we just got these 2 points. This was just done over a weekend. This is why Alberto came back to Göttingen that weekend. He had to take the Friday off. Sorry about that. So we got these 2 points, and within the statistical errors, they're fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't expect there to be any dependence on it whatsoever.
Every referee asks this.
Well, it's
only one of them.
Two. We had four. So.
Can I ask another referee question? I remember some time ago, I think it was at Delft, they had these very long pipes and they found that there was an effect from Coriolis.
Yeah.
Did you see something similar?
Well, it depends also on the pipe diameter. Our pipe diameter is very small here, so you wouldn't be able to see that. Yeah.
What is the outflow condition in DNS?
Oh, it's periodic boundary conditions.
So how is that dependent on the periodicity?
Yeah, what is important is that you make your tube long enough. So for the lifetimes, it turns out the minimum you need is 50 pipe diameters. So this turbulent path set, well, how do you define the length? The active part is about 10, 15 diameters, but then they sort of fade out. And you have to give them enough space to recover to back to a parabolic profile.
But if the lifetime is so long, then maybe it may return if the length is not enough.
Sure, they return all the time. I mean, you just have one puff in there, and it returns all the time. But you have to give it enough space that it's sort of bordering onto laminar flow, and then it doesn't see its own end. If it sees its own tail, then you're in trouble. But this has been tested quite thoroughly, and it turns out at least 50 diameters long, better if you have 70 diameters long. For the splitting, of course, you have to make it bigger because it splits into two, so typically we use 150 diameters in length. That's what makes these things slightly expensive to simulate, but nowadays it's okay.
This Landau the way Beckman's picture tells you that kind of especially since a tree will organize nodes, but temporarily they get encoded. Mm-hmm. Now you're telling us that they actually especially get encoded. But they aren't temporarily trivialized.
No, that's right. You still need to temporarily.
Inside, look inside and kind of, because you create perturbation now, we know, in different ways. I also have this natural equation. But then, if this perturbation survives, lives long enough, would it acquire some universal properties? Maybe not very trivial, but something that you can distinguish that this is a property of this path as a single path as it lives along. Because, you know,
well, you can. Of course, you can do. I mean, people have looked at statistical properties of these puffs.
Like Brun and Wake.
No, but a long time ago, Vinyansky in the 1970s and so on. But to sort of.
Did you distinguish anything?
Well, I mean, nothing I would be able to recall now, which was very specific for them. But maybe to get this, because most of you work at higher Reynolds number. Still, the one point I wanted to make is that you know, in a way, the whole development of what leads to our modern turbulence theory was started actually by Reynolds, right, in this paper, looking for this critical point. So there is certainly a connection, and also to quantify this a little bit more, this is what we submitted to another journal, JFM actually. This is a friction factor in the pipe, and now here's the Reynolds number. And if you keep the flow laminar, you're nicely on the Reynolds over 64 law. So this is a Hagen-Posay law, is a dotted line. The red dotted line is the Blasius prediction for the turbulent. Yeah, Reynolds to the minus 1/4, right? one over four, sorry, yeah. What you see is that, so the crossover would be somewhere here, and this is where the intermittency starts. So what we did is we actually put the turbulent puffs in at the optimum spacing. So if you put them too close, they will decay, so you get less turbulent fraction. But you find if you change the spacing, you find an optimum with a maximum turbulent fraction. And these are the green data points. Now the red one is for another kind of perturbation, and the black one is for another kind of perturbation. So the point is just you can find all kinds of curves, the data connecting these two curves, depending on what perturbation, what entrance, and so on you have. But there's one optimum one, which we could measure, which is the optimum spacing, gives you the highest turbulent fraction available at these Reynolds numbers. And you see that at around 3,000 already, it's indistinguishable from the Blasius curve. So it's not too far away, and where you have some quite uniform turbulence. So I just this is the picture I tried to show before. So down here you have this kind of splitting of puffs, and here it looks already, you have some light bluer spaces here, but it looks quite uniform how turbulence spreads. And here it looks more or less fully turbulent and just...
So the moral is no reason to look with magnifying glass into all this part. Actually already part of turbulence.
Well, this is at 3000 now in the experiment, right? This would be from the numeric space-time, and this is from the experiment, 3000. So, you know, we're at 3000, we are on the Blasius curve. Of course, it's not fully developed turbulence yet.
A long way from that.
Right, 10 to the 5 or something, I believe. Yeah? Oh yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Oh, since we still have a few minutes till the cookies arrive, or maybe there's still some left. I mentioned something about Rotter's alleged 2320. Now, some of you can read German. So what he actually says in his paper, it's on page 280, I looked that up, that the exact value of this critical Reynolds number cannot be determined with the current experiment. It may be close to Reynolds 2000. So he never claimed it was 2300, but everybody quoted him since the 1950s. You know, so. Okay.
Okay, I'm done.